was following them. And it scared him to death. They'd go down this street and go up this other street. It was all dark. We didn't have street lights like they have now. But he could hear somebody still behind him. So when he got home, back then everybody had fences around the yard. Your fence come right up to the sidewalk and you have a gate. My daddy went in this gate and he went in the house and cut the porch light on right quick because he heard somebody coming through that gate. And it was a so-called woman's husband, and he had a shotgun with him. He said, "Mr. Griffith, I just followed you home to be sure you got home on it." He could have killed him for not telling him who he was, you know, either. But when we finally did leave Mobile, that old colored fellow and his wife, Daddy told him was going to move up here on the farm. They begged Daddy to bring them with him if they'd work for him just for the eat. But,
it was
not. Daddy, I know we would be going wrong. We had a lot of trouble back then. The way Catherine and I would go to school, our grandma's school this way. Well, the other side of our school was a colored village. Their children come this way and went to grandma's school back this way as a colored school. Well, we'd meet one another. And we'd walk along sidewalks, and they would, and we would too, bump one another, knock the books out, and they'd start a fight. And it was back when Joe Lewis and Max Bass fought. And, but we could leave our house and go up an alley, the two blocks, and there's a railroad track. You could walk that railroad track, and then we could cut off and go to my grandma's school, and we wouldn't have to go this way. So Daddy made me and Catherine go that way, where we wouldn't get involved in that. And I know Dr. Junior one time, he and I and some other boys was walking along, and some colored kids got the aggravating us. And this colored woman come along, and she said, "Y'all leave those boys alone." So that's a politician's man's boy. They knew that we was who we were. Said, "You leave that boy alone." So he's a politician's man's boy. But Captain and I was going to school one day and was walking along the railroad track. And Captain was walking in the track and I was walking on the track. And this colored boy come along, and when he got to even with Captain, he hit her with his arm like that. I was watching for it. And when he did, I come off that track and I hit him. And his head hit that rail, and it popped like a firecracker going off. I thought, "God, I've killed him." But he got up, holding his head, and run. I don't know whatever happened to him. I told Daddy what happened. But when I hit him, his head hit that track, and it popped. But when we went the other way one morning, we had a big fight with him. And this colored boy, a guy running a drugstore, come out and broke it up. And this colored boy walked down the alley and turned around and picked up a rock and throwed it and hit this boy in the head. And they carried him to a doctor and had his head sewed up. And 2 or 3 years after that, we had moved up here and went back down that distance. And that boy was in the insane asylum. They said where that skull was pressing on his brain, and he'd gone insane. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I didn't see anything else, you know. But back then, the colored people stood aside. When Dad walked down the street in town, better they get out of his way. But they all respect him. They all call him Mr. Griffith. I remember one time, we lived kind of in the middle of the block. And 4 or 5 houses down from us, about halfway to the... We lived, Spring Hill Avenue came this way out of Mobile. And the big street, and down the middle of it was streetcar tracks. That's where we went to town and everything, ride the streetcar. Well, this road over here was called Old Shell Road. It went to on up by Spring Hill College. Well, the street we lived on went between those two. And in the middle, it had an alley that went back for a couple of blocks. But this family had moved in four or five houses up from us, and had been living there for a month. And nobody had, they weren't exactly white, they weren't colored, they were just, you know, kind of in between what you would call
mulattoes.
Yeah. And Daddy had walked up to the store one day and coming back, and she was on the porch, and Daddy looked up and saw her and says, "Hello, Mary." Boy, she went in the house right quick. Daddy come on and said, "When them colored people move on this block?" And Mother says, "Well, they're white people." He said, "That they're not either." Says, "Her mother, I collected insurance from her all the time. Her mother's black as a ace of spades." Well, the neighbors found out about it, and they made them move. She was a high yellow. And it moved in that house.
I hope no neighbor listens to your tape.
I don't know. It's all part of history, so it doesn't. You can't have racial or any kind of bias when you examine history because it's there.
But Daddy had a lot of friends down there that was colored people.
So he really wasn't racist.
And if was, he worked for them at the county home. He worked with them up at the courthouse.
But did he agree that they needed equal rights? Or
no, you didn't hear much talk like that back then. Just like I was never around any racist stuff, except that as kids, well, kids will do that whether white or black.
Mm-hmm.
And but you take in service. It wasn't integrated in service during World War II. But I met some colored guys in service, and I liked them, and they liked me. We got along fine. I never had no problems. It was after World War II, before they integrated the service. And, of course, all the years that I worked with a telephone company, I worked in their homes and in their place of business and everything. And I tell you, a lot of them is a lot better off than some white people I know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're better people than some white people, I know.
Well,
of course, you're going to find scum in both places.
I think Daddy felt like if they respect me, I'll respect them. You know?
Yeah, that was Daddy's attitude.
Is that his attitude just about toward everybody?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
See,
Daddy collected insurance in their homes and everything
mm-hmm.
for a couple of years, and he's used to sitting in their living room or whatever, you know, and talk to them. If he saw them in town walking across the street, he'd holler, "Hey, Mary." And they'd holler, "Hey, Mr. Griffin."
Well, your dad talking about how people like him, his friends and people that he worked with, the telephone company, they stopped by him and see him. They stopped by and talked to him. They love to talk to him.
About your parents' marriage, would you say they were pretty well suited for each other?
They had to be. I have never. Well, they've had little fusses.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing serious. The maddest I have ever seen. My father, my mother. And the nearest that he ever came to hitting her. We lived in Mobile. And like this lady I told you took us on that picnic.
Mm-hmm.
Her husband was a fireman, Miss Mabry. It was one Christmas, and she had baked a Christmas cake.
Fruit cake.
And had soaked it in wine. Well, her maid is at work. she bought four of them.
Hello? Yeah.
Anyway, she gave Mother five or six slices of the fruitcake. Well, that night, when we ate supper, we all ate together. It wasn't us kids that eat, and then they'd eat, or a couple of kids. We all ate at the table at the same time. And we got through eating. And Mother gave us all a piece of that cake. She gave Daddy a piece of it. And he ate it. Now, Mother should have known better. But after he got through eating that cake, she said, "Bob, how do you like that fruitcake?" He says, "Fine." Said, "It's good." He says, "Where'd you get it?" She said, "Miss Mabry brought it over here to us, and she soaked it in wine." Daddy raised up like that and raked his hand up. And then he sat back down, and he says, "Myrtle, don't you ever pull a trick like that on me again." And then he got up and left the table. That's the closest I ever saw my father hit my mother. But when he was growing up, he had a grown older brother that was an alcoholic. And he was afraid if he ever tasted alcohol that he would like it and he'd be an alcoholic like his older brother. So he like lost his temper eating a piece of fruitcake that had been soaked in wine. See, he didn't even know it if she hadn't said something about it. Now, my mother, in her family, she was used to it. I mean, she has tasted wine before, and her brothers, her daddy, took a drink of whiskey every night before he went to bed. And she sipped wine, but Daddy has never tasted. He said he's afraid to taste it. He's never smoked a cigarette, and he's never tasted alcohol.
I think his pastime was telling jokes. That was his.
He told jokes all the time. He could tell.
He told dirty jokes when he was younger, and as he got older, they got less, you know.
He said to me, after Mother died, it's really when he started going to church. See, Mother was a Baptist, and she made us kids go to Baptist church. Well, Daddy wouldn't go because he was a Baptist, but he wouldn't go to the Methodist church either. But when Mother died, he started going to the Methodist church, and he sat down and read the Bible every night. And like I said, he took Bible, you know, in college. And he told me, he said, "You know, Bill, all my life, if I'd spent my time reading the Bible or doing something worthwhile instead of learning all that foolishness and dirty jokes and poems and everything." But he would. He could tell you jokes all day long and never tell you the same one twice.
He didn't tell. It was interesting to sit with the two of them because...
My sister's husband?
With
what? But Daddy... We'd hear him tell a dirty joke, and then we'd have company or something, and Daddy'd say, "Let me tell you this joke." We'd all, but he'd change it around to where it'd be real nice, and we'd be just flinking up. He used to like to pull stuff. When Doc and I believe it was when we was dating, when he pulled that white owl trick on you.
I don't remember.
You know a slop jar. You know, that's a bedpan up there. You've seen a slop jar about that big round, about that high. Well, one day, I believe it's when Duck and I were just still dating. I don't believe it's after we was married. But we came up out there, and Daddy said, "Hey, I caught a white owl yesterday." "Did? Where is it?" He said, "I got it out here in the shed." He said, "Come on, Dawson." So we went out there, and he had this wash tub turned upside down on the floor in this shed. He said, "Now, Bill, you get over here, and Duff, you get over here." He said, "Don't let it get away now." And he jerked that tub up, and there's one of them slop jars, I call it, five slop jars. We both look like that, you know, and he gets by. But he's always pulling jokes. And hidden and stuff like that.
I think his mother and daddy got along great.
I never heard them have a serious argument. I remember one time, like I told you, Daddy collected insurance on a route until he went to the main office. Well, he came home one Saturday night from collecting.